So now we're discussing the fifth ray of Bhagavat, Arka Marichimala. And these rays, their chapters are rays from chapter 4 to verse 10, Hare Krishna. Chapter 4 to verse 10 is Sambandha Gyan. So yesterday we heard about Bhagavat Tattva, the science of the Lord's characteristics, and today is Shakti Tattva. Shakti Tattva means the science of the Lord's energies. Krishna has so many energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividaya Shuyate Sabhavaki Gyana Bala Kriya Cha. Gyan, Bal, and Kriya. Knowledge and power and purification. So it says in the Vedas that God has unlimited energies. And we see in this world there's so many energies. There's light energy, there's water energy, there's air energy, fire energy. There's magnetic energy. There's energy from gas, energy from diesel fuel, natural gas. So many ways, sources of energy. So this world, we're surrounded by so many energies. and they're all coming from Krishna. So this is a discussion of Shakti Tattva, the science of the Lord's energies, because he has different energy. Some are spiritual, some are material. Ultimately, in the final issue, everything is spiritual, because everything's connected with God. But some of his energy is situated a little bit distance from him. And then that energy appears to be separated, although it's not separated. Just like the milk. The cow, we milk the cow, and then milk comes out from the cow. So the milk appears to be separated from the cow. Right? But the milk has no existence without the cow. It cannot exist without the cow. Although it appears it's in the pail that it's separate or individual. So this is like the material energy. The material energy is connected to God. That's called Bina Prakriti Ashtada. Bina Prakriti Ashtada. These eight energies are Bina. They're somewhat separated from the Lord. Separated material energies. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So it's called separate, like the milk is separated from the cow, but it comes from the cow, and it's nothing but the cow. So the material energy appears to be separated from Krishna, but it's nothing but Krishna, and it comes from Krishna. This analogy is given. So the first verse that Bhaktivinoda cites about this discussion of the Lord's energies is from the 87th chapter, which is personified Vedas, the Shrutis. They're praying that they can understand the Lord. This is 10:87:14. Jaya 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 Jam Ajita Dosha Gribita Gunam Tamasi Yadatmana Samavaruda Samastabhaga Aga Jagad Okasam Akila Shakt Yavaboda Kate Kwachit Ajayatmana Cha Charato Nucharen Negamaha. They're saying to the Lord, they're praying to the Lord, O unconquerable one, Ajita, kindly destroy the bewildering influence of your unborn illusory energy, consisting of the three material modes. I mean, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Because by doing so, you are not diminished in the least. By virtue of your own spiritual energy, you're always fully opulent, and the source of all energies within the animate and inanimate worlds. The Upanishads often describe you as a possessor of spiritual material energies. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur opens this chapter with this prayer that the Vedas are saying, please, Lord, we're in this mayic energy, we're in this material world, and we can't really perceive you clearly and get a clear understanding of your identity. You appear to be invisible to us. Just like sometimes the sun is in the sky, but a big cloud comes, and the cloud blocks or impedes our vision of the sun. And someone might say, oh, there's no sun. There's only sky. There's no sun. Someone will say, no, sun is there, but no, I don't see the sun. There's no sun. There's only sky everywhere. So no, see that cloud? Behind that cloud is the sun. So this material energy is like a cloud. It's like a cloud, and behind that cloud is Krishna, the personality. So the Vedas, they're praying, please remove this illusory energy, this material energy, so behind that we can see the sunlight Krishna. Krishna Surya Samamayahai Andhakara. Krishna Surya Sama. He's like equal to the sun, and Maya is like darkness. Maya, Haya, Andhakar. Andhakar means like blindness. Andhajana. So it appears that the Lord is invisible when we're from this viewpoint, from this side of the cloud. But we know that maybe a cloudy day, and we say, oh, there's no sun, it's very cloudy, I can't see the sun, it's so dark down here. But if we go on an airplane and we fly above the clouds, then what do we find? Brilliant, brilliant sun. Scintillating sunshine. We need to put on sunglasses. Pilot's glasses. Ray-Ban pilot's glasses. Very thick, very dark. It's so bright. Of course, their windshields are tinted also. Of the airplane, the jet. It's so bright. But the same thing. When we're under this cloud of the material energy, we say, oh, there's no God. I don't believe in God. Show me God. I can't see God. It's just everywhere clouds. It's everywhere darkness. Everywhere dull. So no, you have to come with me. Hold my hand and fly with me. And we fly above all these clouds. And you'll see, there's a land of light, a land of knowledge, a land of God, beyond this cloud covering. I say, really? I say, yes. And so then, how do I penetrate all these clouds? By transcendental knowledge, divya chakshush, divya gyan. By transcendental knowledge, you can penetrate through all this ignorance. Om anjana timirandasya, garanjana shalakaya, chakshur militamina tasmai shi gurave nama. So guru chakshush, shastra chakshush, then we can see the reality. So they're saying, firstly, they're starting the verse by saying, please remove this covering of illusory energy, which is the modes of nature, and then I can understand that you are the possessor of all spiritual material energies. So this is the prayer. He's starting off this way. So it's basically a humble approach to the Lord, approaching the Lord Shakti Tattva, the truth about his energies. He has multivariated energies, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is taking advantage of a humble prayer from the Shrutis personified in their approach to the Lord. O Ajita, O Unconquerable One, you're Ajit or Ajita. We can't conquer you with our intelligence, with our mind, with our senses. How can we conquer God? One of Prabhupada's godbrothers used to say that trying to accommodate the absolute truth, the spiritual reality within the mind, trying to accommodate or fit the spiritual reality within the material mind is like trying to sit an elephant on a saucer. You have a cup and a saucer, it's a little tiny plate. It's like trying to sit an elephant on a saucer. It's not possible. It's like Ganeshan is the inconceivable Wahan. Ganesh is a mouse. Ganesh rides on a little, he's this fat, huge elephant, and he rides on his little mouse. So this is inconceivable. And this is why that whole arrangement is there. It's the inconceivability of the absolute. That anything's possible, that an elephant can ride on the back of a mouse. This is what it's proving there. So this is the first point. So now, we can't accommodate the Lord with our material intelligence and mind. We can't really understand, so we have to pray. Humility, prayer, submission, service, then the Lord may reveal. So then, next text, he says that the Lord has unlimited energies. So first we establish that it's very difficult to understand these energies. Then we understand that he has material and spiritual energies. Now he's saying he has unlimited energies. And he's quoting the Sutta Goswami, 1.18.19. Kutapuna agri natum namatasya mahatamai kanta parayanasya yonanta shaktir bhagavan ananto mahat gunatvad yamananta mahu. They Sutta Goswami said, when our diseases are cured simply by uttering the names of great personalities, then what can be said of those who chant the holy names of the Supreme Lord? The goal of exalted personalities is the Supreme Lord, who possesses unlimited energies. He is called Ananta because he is full of unlimited energies. So the Sutta Goswami, firstly, is establishing this point of Shakti Tattva by saying, Ananta Shaktir Bhagavan Ananto. That Bhagavan is unlimited, Ananta. He says, Ananta Shakti, Ananta Bhagavan. And then he says, Mahaguna Ananta. He has unlimited great qualities, unlimited power, and he himself is unlimited. That's why he's called Ananta. He's full of unlimited energies. So there's no limit to the energies of God. You can't limit God or make him conditional. Well, God is spiritual, so he can only have spiritual energies. He's not allowed to have material energies. Material energies are temporary. God's eternal. Material energies are so much problem over here, and heaven, spiritual world, is supposed to be problem-free. So this material energy must be something else, separate from God, disconnected with God. It must have its own origin, or independent origin, independent existence. But that's not said here. That all he has unlimited energies, so he has conditional energies, he has unconditional energies, he has material energies and spiritual energies, all energies he has. But that's why he's called Ananta. But an interesting point he's making, Sutta Goswami, diseases are cured simply by uttering the names of great personalities. So what does this mean? This means that we have diseases, Sharira Rog, physical diseases of the body. And in the Charak Samhita, and also in the Shushuta Samhita, there's famous books about Ayurvedic medicine. They're explaining that different diseases can be cured by calling the names of different personalities. For example, if someone gets bitten by a snake bite, they get bitten by a snake, then they're supposed to call, there's one mantra, Asita Devala, Asita Devalo Rishi, something like this. And you call out the name of these different rishis. It says great personalities. By uttering the names of great personalities, he says, Nama Tasya Mahatma. Mahatma Aikanta Parayanasya. So these are great rishis, and if one recites this mantra, then you won't die from a snake bite. Of course, usually people don't know these things. Brahmins know them. And then there's other mantras. When one takes Ayurvedic medicine, he's supposed to remember Dhanvantari. Of course, Dhanvantari is a great personality, but he's also an avatar of the Lord. Dhanvantari, Bhagavan Dhanvantari, is one avatar of the Lord. Came out of the Kheer Samudra, the ocean of milk, when they were churning. Then Dhanvantari came out with the Kumbha, Amrit Kalash, which is the name of Maharishi's Chyavanprash. He calls it Amrit Kalash. He's trying to play on the Bhagavatam. When Dhanvantari came, he had this pot of nectar of immortality. Then the demigods and demons were fighting about it. Then Mohini Murti appeared, and she said, look, I'll distribute fairly this nectar. And of course, she was going to favor the demigods. Then Rahu Ketu and Rahu sat on either side of the sun, on Suryadev, or the moon planet or whatever. And then she was giving out the nectar. And then Rahu, he got some in his hand, and he drank it. And then Chandra or Surya saw that, hey, this is Rahu, our enemy. The enemy's come and sat in our line. He's supposed to sit on the other line, get his share later. So they took out the sword and cut off Rahu's head. So Rahu only has a head. So all he can do is swallow, but he can't digest. He can swallow, but he can't digest. He's a head. And even he doesn't have his planet, Rahu and Ketu, cannot be seen. Their planets are totally subtle. It's like an aura, or it's just like an energy field. Rahu and Ketu, there's no substance. You can put your hand through them. They have no substance. But they have effect. They're very powerful planets, Rahu. Usually people die in Rahu or Ketu. It's called Atma Maraka, killer of the self. Either major or minor period of Ketu or Rahu, then person's finished. Especially later in their age. So then he got his head cut off. So then all he can do now, because Surya or Chandra, I forget who, one of the two cut his head off. So then he was always after them. And there's all lunar eclipse and solar eclipse. So then Rahu, he comes and he approaches them, and he swallows the sun and he swallows the moon. When he swallows the sun, it's called solar eclipse, Surya Grahan, and lunar Grahan, or say Chandra Grahan. But he just, as I said, he swallows, but he can't digest, because he only has a head. So if he digested, there'd be no more sun. Like you eat food and you digest, so there's no more food. It's transformed. If you eat, But if I eat something, it comes out my throat. It'll look the same as I ate it. If I take a piece of apple and go and swallow it, and it comes out my throat, oh, look, same. Mahamahaprasad. But if it's processed, then maybe you're not so attracted to the Mahamahaprasad. If it's digested, then you may have some doubts. So this is Rahu. He swallows the planet, but he doesn't digest it. So therefore, it still exists after he swallows it. It goes in his mouth, and one muhurta later, it comes out his throat. Otherwise, we'd be a lot colder than we are now. If there is no sun planet. So this is... and there's another mantra. So you say when you're taking Ayurvedic medicines, and to cure a disease, you chant Om Shri Dhanvantari Namaha. So this is... So he's saying that... Sutta Goswami is saying power by reciting names of great personalities, great mahatmas, you can cure diseases. What to speak of the power of the spiritual names of the Lord? So much power is there. Next verse he quotes is from Dhruva Maharaj, 4th canto 9:15, where Dhruva Maharaj is explaining what he's realized. These are Dhruva Maharaj's realizations, the realizations of a 5-year-old. He's not an ordinary 5-year-old. He has a PhD in tapasya. PhD in tapasya, austerity. He went to Madhavan, stood on one leg and chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And he started, first month he only ate water, and second month he ate leaves. And after the third month he was just breathing air. And then he was taking, then he progressed in his pranayama, he would take one breath every week, and then one breath every month. And what would happen, when he would take that one breath, he would take all the air in the whole universe. You know, like a vacuum cleaner. Dhruva vacuum cleaners. And it would suck up the whole air. So then all the demigods, oh, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. So I went to Vishnu and said, this little boy is taking more than a share. He's taking the lion's share. The lion's share, he's taking every share, all shares. He has controlling shares in the whole stock of the universe, and the air in the whole universe, he has controlling stock. So then they petitioned Vishnu, can you do something? He says, yes, I'm in his heart, I know his idea. I know his intention, I know his sankalpa, I'll take her immediately, at the earliest. So then Vishnu, from there, Vishnu manifested here, came out of his heart, gave Sakshat Darshan. So this boy, Dhruva, is speaking. Tam nitya mukta parishuddha vibuddha atma kutasta adi purusho bhagavam shayadishaha yad buddhya vastitamakanditaya surjistya jasta Sitavat Dimako Vyatiti Rikta Ase. Oh my Lord, of course this is interesting, that when Dhruva Maharaj had Sakshat Darshan of Lord Vishnu, Narayan, he was dumbfounded. He was like, because he was meditating and seeing the Lord in his heart. And all of a sudden the Lord was out right in front of him, standing there. And he was only a 5-year-old boy and he didn't study Sanskrit. And he didn't attend VIHE or MIHE. And he didn't come to any of our classes over here. So he didn't learn any of these tattvas. He didn't know any of these truths. So he was just standing there. Imagine a little boy sees this huge forearm figure in front of him. So beautiful with Gada, Chakra, Padma, Shank in his hands. So he was a little dumbfounded. So then it says that Lord Vishnu took his conch and he, Kapola Sparsha. This Kapola means a cheek. He touched his cheek with his conch shell. And when he touched his cheek with a conch shell, then he was able to speak. He was empowered. By that direct contact with the Lord, he was empowered to speak Sanskrit. And so he spoke so many verses in 4th Canto Bhagavatam. It's a rather lengthy verse here. 9 words per line, 4 lines, 9 words. Tam nitya mukta parishuddha vibuddha atma. Perfect chandas, which means meter, and perfect, everything was perfect arrangement here. So this is the magic of Vishnu's conch shell. O Lord, you are eternally liberated. You are pure, most knowledgeable, the supreme, the primeval Lord, full of 6 opulences, and the Lord of the internal, marginal, external energies. You are a truth separate from the living entities. By your unbroken transcendental vision, you are the witness of all intellectual activities. You are Lord Vishnu, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. You maintain the affairs of the whole material creation. Thus, there is an eternal difference between you and the living entities. By nature, you are omniscient, pure, unchangeable, original, and the master of the three material modes. The living entities who are prone to become contaminated can become liberated only by your mercy. They are less intelligent, prone to be tempted by Maya, parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, without opulence, powerless and dependent because of their minute independence. So it's quite a detailed prayer from a 5-year-old boy. You really seem to have a master's degree in philosophy. Sadarshan. He understands the situation. So he's explaining how Krishna is the Lord of the internal, marginal, external energies. He could understand this. So he's, by his prayer, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, through the mouth of Dhruva Maharaj, he's establishing the position of the Lord and the relationship of the Lord to his energies. That he is the master of these energies. But we living entities, there's a difference between the living entities and God. And this is the whole idea of Sambandha Tattva. This whole discussion of these chapters, or Ray 4 to Ray 10, is all about Sambandha Tattva. Who is God? Who am I? Am I God? Or is someone else God? Am I big or am I small? Am I powerful or how powerful? Is God more powerful? So my identity and Bhagavan's identity is being clearly delineated here in terms of Shakti. That we are, what we are we God? No. We are simply one of his Shaktis, potencies. One of his many unlimited potencies. So we can't be too proud. And we have minute independence, but because we're so minute and so tiny, we're actually powerless and dependent. We're always dependent. We're always dependent on God. Although due to illusion, through the influence of Maya, we think we're independent. We can do as we choose, do as we please. But this is all, it's like the man, they have this kind of dog leash now, I saw in Bombay, new fashioned leash. It's like a fishing reel. Leash means the chain that ties the dog. You used to have like 8 feet or 6 feet. Dog has a collar and a little ring and you put this thing like this. And you walk the dog. But now they have this new thing I noticed in Bombay. Always trying a new and improved dog saver. So they have he has a round plastic thing with a handle on it. And inside it's like an extension cord. It has like 100 feet. 100 feet wrapped around like a fishing pole, but it has a pull on it. So you pull it and it gets tight, and like these seat belts. You know, pull the seat belt, you go like this. Some spring is there. So if he pulls it, then it gets tight. But if he presses a button, then he lets it out. So then it goes out for like 100 meters. So the dog, he's hooked onto the dog. So he's usually like 6 feet, and he's walking the dog. Dog poops or whatever he does, and meets some other dogs out on the beach and discusses things and hello, this, that. You know, all the dogs, they have little discussions and sniffing and whatever. And growling, ha, and they have their interaction. So then sometimes he wants to let the dog go. So he presses a button and the dog goes, ha, ha, and he's running. Oh, I'm free, I'm independent. He's running, he goes, because it's only 100 meters or 100 feet. Because I watch the guys like this, and dogs going, ha, ha, ha. And he thinks, oh, I'm free. There's nothing holding me. There's no collar. I mean, there's no rope on my neck. I'm a free dog. Ha, ha, ha. Tong. And then he's stuck. He can't go. And the guy goes, you know, and then he starts wheeling him in. Come on, dog. You know, zhoot, and the dog goes, like a yo-yo. Zhoot, you know, so the dog goes out and comes back. So we're like yo-yos in the hand of God. What goes down goes up. You know, God is playing with each jiva like a yo-yo. You know yo-yo? This little thing like this, and you go, it goes, so when we go down, it's like, wow, look, I'm dangling here. I'm so free and I'm independent. Hey, let's start a factory. Let's start a country. Let's start a nation. Let's start a family. Oh, we're so independent. And then, and then you're all wrapped around, bent around backwards, you know. So that, or like the dog, oh, look how we're running. I'm running on four wheels, and dog's running on four legs. Prabhupada said the only difference between man and the dog is running on four legs, a man is running on four wheels. Dog is going, ha, ha, food, bone, and the man is going, money, money, oh, money, sales, zoom, 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 zoom. He's running all over the city. Give me a bone, give me a bone, give me a bone. Sign my contract, buy my product, buy and sell, give me money and I get my bone. And he's running, oh, ha, ha, bone, bone. The Prophet really, he knew how to phrase things. Dog, what is the difference between dog and man? Modern man is simply a polished version of the animals. If you see an animal with nail polish on his fingernails and a diamond studded collar and a nice little sweater, in New York the dogs wear a little sweater, and they paint the fingernails. And then they have a little diamond collar and sometimes a little earring in his ear, you know, pierced dog ears, little diamond there. He's, you know, his ears are sticking out with a little diamond on each ear. Wow, that's a flat, look at that fleshy dog, you know. Polished animal. There's nothing but a polished animal. They said, what is this? Just doing the same things a dog is doing. Dog is running on four legs and you're running on four wheels. So this is the illusion of our independence. Actually, we're dependent. There's always somebody controlling, holding onto the leash, pressing the button. Okay, run. You want to run? Okay. Tong. Oh. New body. Tum. So Dhruva Maharaj is understanding this. Now there's a prayer by Mother Dharani speaking to... Well, it just says Dharani is speaking to Dharma. She says, even Lakshmi worships Krishna's lotus feet. Now there's a verse that describes some of the different energies of the Lord. 10:39:55. This is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit. Shriya Pushtya Gira Kantya Kirtya Tushtyela Yorjaya Vidya Vidya Yavidyaya Shaktya Mayaya Cha Nishevitam. The Lord's spiritual energy has three features. So now they're talking the Lord has unlimited material and spiritual energies and also marginal. Now we're zeroing in on the spiritual energy. Has Ladini features, Sandini and Samvit. And then there are some names of the different energies of the Lord. Shri, Pushti, Gir, Kanti, Kirti, Tushti, Ila, Urja, Vidya, Avidya and Maya. There's 10 there. Actually, in other places, it lists 16 energies of the Lord, in 11th canto, one purport. There's eight of those energies are part of the Antaranga Shakti, acting in the spiritual world, and eight are acting here. There's 16 energies altogether. It's called Sodasha Kala, something like this. Sodasha Kala means 16 energies, 16 varieties of energy. And that is why Jagannath, his Rath Yatra cart, has 16 wheels. There's 16 wheels on his cart. And Balaram's cart is 14 and Subhadra's has 12. Because I think Balaram has some less expression of energies. But they say that he has 16 wheels because they represent these 16 energies. So now these energies are described, what their aspect is. The word Shri... The Shri Shakti refers to opulence and the Sandini aspect. Sandini means existence. The power, the potency to make something exist. If something has to exist, it needs to have some object needs a place of existence. It has to have some support. So supporting energy, existing potency is called Sandini. Pushti refers to the power of maintenance. Gir refers to the power of speech. Or the Vedic literatures. Kanti refers to beauty by which the form of Krishna looks attractive. Kirti refers to the power to spread the glories. Tushti refers to Ladini aspect or pleasure potency. Ila refers to Bhushakti. Bhushakti means earth, the power of earth, or Bhu. It's called Ila. And if you read in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, it says this whole Bhu Mandal is called Ilavata Varsh. Ilavata. Ilavata Varsh, this Varsh, this island, this whole Bhumandala, this whole huge plane of where millions and millions of planets are in this Bhumandala. This is the expression of Krishna's Ila. Shakti, Bhu Shakti. Urja refers to Lila Shakti. Urja, this is Kartik, it's called Urja Brat. It's called in Nectar Devotions, that's Urja, or Urjeshri is the name for Radharani. So she is the controller of so many Leelas, Urja. And Urja Brat is a Brat which we observe in Karti to please Srimati Radharani. Vidya refers to actual knowledge, and Avidya refers to the power of degradation. Because when one is in ignorance, then he becomes degraded. So this is a nice verse where Shukadeva Goswami is giving a very detailed explanation of not only the spiritual energies, three features, but the specific branches. To give some idea, we say Krishna's energies are unlimited. Well, here is a sampling. It's not giving unlimited names, it's giving 10 names. In other places, 16 names of particular energies which do particular things. Like you may have one energy, it's called your artistic energy. And with that energy, you do some drawings. And then you have another energy called your electric energy. So with that energy, you make something electrical. And you might have so many different energies. So we as human beings, we have different energies. We have the energy of creation, the energy of destruction. We can create something, we can destroy it, we can maintain it. So this is Pushti as maintenance, creation as Srishti, and destruction as Pralaya. And then all different, some people have creative power in speech, some people have creative power in art, some people have creative power in dance, some people have creative power in manipulating money or the material energy. These are type of powers. So even we as limited beings, we have some portion of the Lord's energy within us. The variegated powers of the Lord are also within us to a very minute extent. So this is a prayer from Gajendra. You see how the discussion goes all over the Bhagavatam, but the same point is being discussed. Gajendra prayed to the Lord in 8th canto, chapter 3, verse 28. Namo namastubhya masaya vega shakti trayaya kila digunaya rupanapalaya duranta shaktaye karindrayanam anavapya vartmane. So Gajendra is praying. He's quite in distress, being eaten alive by the alligator inside the lake at Gandamarana Mountain. And so he's remembering from his past life. They say that an elephant never forgets. They have this phrase, elephant never forgets. So somehow this King Huhu, from the heavenly planets, he was a king or a singer maybe. Maybe he was a singer, I forget, or a king. Somehow he was cursed to fall from heaven and became a crocodile. One became a crocodile and the other became an elephant. I think the king became an elephant. So Gajendra is that king. In his last life he was a king. When he was a king, he used to offer so many stutis or stotrams. Just like nowadays, people often have a regular niyam that every day they chant Hanuman Chalisa, or every day they chant Vishnu Sahasranam, or Devi Bhagavat, or so many fixed prayers they may chant. Gopal Sahasranam, Durga Sahasranam. There are many, many prayers, stutis and stotrams. And people, they're pious people, they're religious people, they're engaging in their family life or royal life or whatever life. But they spend some time every day praying to Bhagavan, and this is their habit, becomes their habit. Every day one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So we have our habit of chanting Maha Mantra and maybe chanting Radha Kripa Kataksha every day, or Gopi Gita, or some prayers we chant every day as an offering to the Lord. It's very common practice in India. They have the Gita Press publishes so many of these little books, Hanuman Chalisa, this one, that one, and people carry them around and they chant. So in the last life the king was doing this, he was chanting prayers to Vishnu because he was a pious Vaishnav king. But somehow, due to his bad luck, his bad karma, he became cursed to become an elephant. But that curse was not so extensive that he forgot his prayers. He remembered the prayers that he chanted in his last life. So therefore he was able to, even an elephant's body, he was able to speak. So this shows that speaking power doesn't actually come from the body. It comes from the soul. All power actually comes from the soul. Because ordinarily elephants don't speak. Parrots don't speak. but they can be trained or they can speak. So we see in the Bhagavatam there's some cases. And also in the case of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was a king. Then he took a birth as a deer. In that deer's body, he remembered that deer is explained in Bhagavatam. He was speaking prayers. When he was living outside the hermitages of the sages in the same forest where the king died, he would take birthing in that same forest as a deer. He used to go outside the hermitage of the sages, and they would give out milk prasad. And the deer would drink milk. And after drinking milk, he would sit there and speak prayers. And so this is a very special deer. So when he was speaking prayers, that naturally all the rishis in the ashram, they became endeared to that deer, not to the extent of, they became dear to that deer. Not like Bharat Maharaj, they didn't get attached, but they say, well, he's a special deer, must have been a fallen yogi, maybe from our ashram or whatever. So they make sure he ate every day. So when this deer left his body, then he chanted the Lord's holy name. And because of that chanting, then he was given the body of a Brahmin, next life, Jad Bharat. And of course he became a great he was a great devotee of the Lord. Oh, Daksha from fourth canto of Bhagavatam, when the Shiva's followers cut his head off and they replaced it with a goat's head from the Yajna, and he could still remember his past. Oh, he glorified Lord Shiva through the goat's mouth. That's nice. Yeah, so speaking power does not come from the body. You say, oh, animals can't speak, all humans can speak. Now the scientists are slowly discovering what we already knew long ago. Everything is in the Vedas. There's nothing new under the sun. The whole repository of all knowledge that's ever been available to man or ever will be available to man is contained in the Vedic literature. This is all coming from God. And we are saying that in our own scriptures, Bhakti Granth, we're saying that Krishna speaks to all the living entities. When he goes out in the forest in Vrindavan, he talks to the cows, he talks to the birds. It says he talks to them. He speaks their language. It says he speaks to them. So that means they speak Brajbhas. The dogs speak Brajbhas. The birds, the parrots, the peacocks, the cows, the buffalo, the goats. And Krishna talks to them. So now scientists are starting to find out, oh, we thought only human beings talked, or maybe minor birds or parrots can be taught to speak, or this cockatoo or whatever, they have these different birds. But now we find out that even fish are speaking. The porpoises, the dolphins and porpoises, they're also speaking. They have their language. Hello. And they can be trained to speak English also. So they're training dolphins, they speak. Hello.
Hi, Maharaj.
Yeah. So what's speaking? The fish is speaking or the Atma is speaking? So the Atma is speaking through the vehicle of the body, and the Paramatma is moving the Atma according to his destiny and karma. So Gajendra offers his prayer. Namo namas tubhyam asaya vega shakti trayaya kiladi gunaya rupanapalaya duranta shaktiye karindriyanam manavapya vartmane. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you, Lord Vishnu. You possess energies whose influence is impossible to overcome. You possess all knowledge. You are the maintainer of the surrendered souls. Your energies are insurmountable, and you are unapproachable through material senses. So at this point in time, Gajendra is really surrendered because he's about to get devoured by an alligator. So if an alligator is about to eat you up, you may think it's a good time to surrender to God. You say, well, I never thought about it before. I was really too busy accumulating and expanding and enjoying. But now I don't think I should fix my mind on anything else but God. Oh God, please save me. Oh God, please help me. So Gajendra was in this mood of situation where he had no choice but to surrender. Because he was a pious elephant, a religious elephant, a devotee in his last life, he turned to God. He plucked a lotus flower from the river, from the lake, with his trunk, and he offered that lotus flower up to the Lord. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakti prayachati. With love and devotion, And then a prayer that he remembered from his last life. Because they say elephants never forget. But he wasn't an elephant in his last life. He was a king. He was an elephant-like king, I suppose. Because elephants, king of the jungle. Ah, pom, 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 pom. So kings walk like that also. Pom, pom, pom. I'm the king. So that ego is there. That king's ego is in an elephant. So that same ego that he had as a king was carried into getting a body of an elephant. He didn't become a squirrel. The king didn't become a squirrel. He became an elephant. Closest thing to a king in the animal kingdom is an elephant. So he offered this prayer. And he's saying that your energies are insurmountable. Impossible to overcome the influence. So this he's realized, this is direct realization. This isn't just philosophy. This isn't just gyan. This is vigyan. He's directly realizing, yes, it's impossible for me to overcome your energy in the form of this alligator. This alligator is also your energy. Everything is energy. Energy is everywhere. This is what the whole... What is it? Energy equals mass or mc squared or whatever. You know, everything... Einstein, everywhere is energy. And so he's realizing, yes, there's no way out for me. I can't defeat this... alligator, I can't win. So I understand that the influence of your energies is impossible to overcome, so now I surrender. Please help me. Then Dhruva Maharaj prays in 4.9.16 that although that in that supreme Brahman, contradictory natures are present in perfect harmony, nevertheless various energies like Vidya constantly serve him with awe and reverence. So Dhruva is giving further discussion about the nature of Brahman. It seems that there's contradictory natures. Because we say that Brahman has no hands, but he has hands. He has no legs, but he has no hands, but he accepts offerings. He has no legs, but he walks everywhere. He has no face or eyes, but he sees and hears everything. That seems contradictory nature. Because Brahman is just amorphous, nirgun, no qualities, nirakar, no form. But that's only the energy of the Lord. Behind that is the person. So the person is covered by the impersonal. The personality of Bhagavan is covered by the impersonal energy known as Brahman. So it goes on, develops many points about the different energies. He describes the material energy is composed of modes of nature. And then he starts explaining about Krishna's pastimes. Because the whole idea of the Bhagavatam, of course, is to bring one from the material energy to the spiritual energy. To bring one from the material world to the spiritual world. So having a thorough understanding of these external energies and internal energies and how they work and how they function will enable one to become convinced about where he's going or where he is and progress in the spiritual path. So it's a very nice question is asked by Vidura to Maitreya. This conversation went on in Gurgaon. No, that was Uddhava. Later. Uddhava, Vidura met Uddhava in Gurgaon, had some discussion. Then later, Vidura went to Himalayas and he met Maitreya. So Vidura inquires from the sage Maitreya as follows. Is Brahman katam bhagavatash chin matras sya vikarina nilaya chapiyujiran nirganasya gana kriya Kridiyan Udyaman Arbasya Kamashchi Kridi Shantaya Swatas Triptasya Chakatam Nivritasya Sadanyata Teshita Kalatoyo Sav Vavasta Swatunyata Aviluta Valobad Atma Sayujye Tajyakatam. O Brahmana, how does the Supreme Lord, who is fully transcendental, become involved with Maya in the course of his pastimes? So this material world is controlled by Maya, Mahamaya. It's called the external energy of the Lord. The Lord is spiritual, he's transcendental, but he comes to this material world. So how does it work? How does he become involved? He shows his pastimes in the material world. How is it possible? How does the transcendental become entangled with matter or material? Ambition makes a child act. The Supreme Lord is self-satisfied. So he's making a point. The sage is saying, If someone has desire, then they act. Thinking, feeling, and willing. You have some thought, some desire, then you act. So ambition makes a child acts because of ambition or desire. So the Lord is also controlled by desire? He's asking. He says the Supreme Lord is self-satisfied and devoid of all material desire. So what can he gain from others? He's Atmaram and Aptakam. He's satisfied within himself and he has no desire to be fulfilled. So he doesn't need anybody else. If we're empty or if we're in want, then we need someone else for fulfillment. If we have no money, then we need money from somewhere or someone. If we have no love within ourselves or self-manifested love, then we have to seek love from some other person. So there's a deficiency within the living entity. But God is no deficiency. He's 100% efficiency. And he's 100% he's self-satisfied, Atmaram and Aptakam. We have so many desires, he has no desires. So then, Vidura is asking Maitreya, if he is self-satisfied, he's Atmaram, which he is, and he has no material desire, what can he gain from others? Because we have desires, so we try to fulfill that desire by catching some other person. I have this product, I want to sell it. I have a desire to sell this product. So I catch you and you buy it. I sell this to you. So I have to get other people to buy my product, otherwise I'm flat. I don't make a sale, I can't live. Because I have desire for money. I desire to for food, to exist. I have a desire to exist. But Krishna has no desire. So why has he come here? There must be some reason. He's coming here, he's acting, he's in the material world, he's coming here to this material world. This is the plane of karma and avidya, the plane of ignorance and action. And he's coming to the world of action, but he has no acts to do. And here everybody's interacting with it's called plane of interaction. Everyone's interacting with one another. No one can exist in an independent way. We have to interact with some person, with the animals, with the trees, with the plants. We have to interact with some living entity. Even if you're a sage in the forest, you have to interact with the trees. They're personalities, they're living entities. You have to take a fruit. You have to take some nuts. You have to eat some leaves. So everyone is interacting. Everyone is gaining something from others. So if God is coming here, what is he coming? What is he coming here to gain? He wants a donation? You came to get a donation? Here, take your 100 rupees, go. Like when somebody comes to some grihastha's house, oh, you just want money. Swamiji, here, take your money, go. Don't tell me anything. No, I don't need your money. I have more money than you do. Listen to what I have to say. You're in Maya. Whoa, hey, Swamiji, go. Jao, here's take 10,000 rupees, go. No, you keep the 10,000. Will you listen to me? No, I don't want to listen. You're going to upset my whole program. So that's what they usually do. They send a donation in the mail. How can the Lord, who is not under the control of time or place or person, and who is naturally unaffected, become induced to get involved with his energy maya? In other words, he's in his own paravyom in the spiritual world. It's a land of there's no desire, he's just lila, he's enjoying there. Why has he come down here in maya? This external energy, which is full of all these things, is full of time, the time element, in different places and persons who are all in want. Everyone's in want here. Everyone's on the make, on the move, trying to get something. Everyone here is trying to get something, collect something, grab something, hold something, have something. But he has everything. He's having everything. He's holding everything. There's nothing more. There's nothing more to hold. Everything's in his hand. So there's nothing to grab. There's nothing out to grab because it's all in his hand. Nothing to have, he has it all. No needs, because he's the Mahanidhi. Mahanidhi is Vishnu. It's a name for Vishnu, Mahanidhi. So now, what is Maitreya, how does he answer this question? That's given in 379. Sayam Bhagavato Maya Yannayena Nirudyate Ishvarasya Vimuktasya Karpanyam Uta Bandhanam. Vidura, how can I answer your question? This question is, how the Transcendental Lord comes into this material world? Is there a cause? Cause of all, everything has a cause and effect. What is the cause? What is the reason? What is the hetu? There is no cause. other than the Lord's energy. You want to understand all this through your intelligence and reasoning, but it's not possible. Mental speculation and reasoning are limited, and as such they have no entry into the science of an unlimited object. Therefore you are arguing, but the Lord's energy is inconceivable. So he pulled a fast one on him. He asked a complicated question. He said, well, it's just the Achintya Shakti of the Lord. It's like when you're playing cards. You have the Ace of Spades. So that's the final clincher. You put down the king, the queen. Everybody's wondering what you have, you know. And then you go, tong! And you put down the, oh! And then you clean up all the cards. You defeat everybody. Because you have the winning card. So whenever you find something that's difficult to answer about Bhagavan, or something that's inconceivable or inexplicable or unreasonable or unfathomable, then you say, oh, well, you see, this is the inconceivable energy of the Lord. Achintya Shakti. Shakti means energy. Achintya means inconceivable. Achintana. You can't think about it. Achintan. Achintya. Acha. Okay, well, thanks a lot. So therefore, it gets down to the point of surrender. Like how to know? Can you conceive or can you know what goes on in the bedroom of the prime minister? You can have some idea. You can meditate or think about it, but you'll never really know unless he takes you there, takes you inside. Says, okay, spend the night here, and then you can understand if you care to. He just snores. Hey, he's just like me. What do you do? So, but by surrender and by submission and by service, you may serve the Prime Minister in such a way, you may become so confidential with him or so friendly with him that he may bring you there. So this is the whole approach to God. And God is Achyuta, and he's Anantam, he's unlimited, and he's infallible, way beyond us. So this is the whole presentation of Bhagavatam. The surrender must be there. Faith and surrender. This is the capital to enter the spiritual domain. Faith and surrender. And you say, oh, what is this faith? No, this is reasonable faith. It's not blind faith. It's faith. It's faith based on reason. Reason can bring you to the doorway. And faith can open the door. So reason, logic, intellect, inquiry, using your intellect, your buddhi or your man, it can bring you to the doorway of the spiritual world. You can get some understanding. But to actually enter the doorway and perceive God, then there must be faith. Faith is the entrance. And surrender. Because he always keeps himself one step ahead of your intellect. One step ahead of your mind. One step ahead of your reason. Otherwise, then you can say, oh, this God, I put him in my hand. Hey, God, hey, dance in my hand. You're a puppet. Hey, sit down, stand up, jump, huh? With my reasoning power, with my intellectual power, I've captured God. Look, he's in. You want to see God? I'll show you. You want to see God? Look. Uh-huh. He said, hey, get back. He can't be held in our fist. All rights reserved. All rights reserved for the Absolute. Copyright, Bhagavan. So it's with him. It's in his field. Otherwise, he loses his Godship. He loses his Godhood. If he can be put in your pocket, then how is he God? He's above and beyond. So now he says, the Lord's energy is inconceivable. And now taking up this point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna's pastimes are inconceivable. Who can understand them through argument? And then Shukadeva Goswami explains this point to Parikshit in 10.14.57. Sarvesham api vastunam bhavarto bhavati stitaha chasyapi bhagavan krishna kim atad vastu rupyatam. All material and spiritual objects are the effects of Krishna's energy. This has been ascertained. Lord Krishna is the ultimate shelter of all those energies. Therefore, how can you determine the existence of an object without Krishna? Vastu means object. Vastu rupyatam. There's the rupam and the vastu. The rupam is the external form. What we see is the rupam. But the vastu is the substance. The substance behind the rupam. The rupam, I'll give you an example of rupam. Rupam, you have an electric heater. That's rupam, that's heat. Then you have another thing called air conditioning, that rupam. That air conditioning gives cooled air. But what's the vastu behind it? The vastu behind it is electricity. The essential substance behind these two expressions of form, that electricity is expressed as a form. In one form, it comes as a heater, heats your house. Another form, it cools your house as an air conditioner. But behind the two form, rupams, is one vastu, eki vastu. It's called chit vastu, or chid vastu. Behind everything is consciousness. Everything is floating in consciousness. Just like the sea and all these icebergs are floating, but actually they're floating in the ocean, but the ocean is the consciousness. So all these planets, all these individuals, everything is floating in the sea of consciousness. Consciousness is the background of reality. So therefore, Krishna is saying that Shukadeva is telling that it's all rupyatam, but sarvesham apivastunam. Behind everything, behind all this material energy, the spiritual energy, this marginal energy, the vastu, the chit, behind that is the chit vastu. The chit vastu is consciousness, Krishna consciousness, Krishna conception. Krishna, from Krishna, all of this is coming. So many different forms, rupams, the form of sandini, ladini, samvit, and then this material energy and the jivas and the nityabhata jivas, all these are different rupyatams. But the vastu is one, eki vastu, chit vastu, and so many expressions. So he's saying that all material and spiritual objects, rupams, are the effects of Krishna's energy, his chit vastu. Krishna is the ultimate shelter of all those energies. Like in your house, you have so many rupatams of electricity. You have a hair dryer, you have a mixie, you have an iron, you have an air conditioner, you have a heater, you have electric toothbrush, vacuum cleaner, television, teapot, this, that, other thing, refrigerator. So many expressions, but it's all coming from one line, the electric line. So there's so many expressions. Parasya shaktir vividaya shriyate subhavaki gyan balakriyasha. All the expressions of energy throughout the universe, manifest and unmanifested area, is all coming from consciousness. One consciousness from Krishna. So stating that point, then Shukadeva Goswami says to Pariksit, therefore, this being true, how can you determine the existence of an object without Krishna? In other words, Krishna is everywhere. Any rupam, this is an object. So that's why Prabhupada explains in his Yoga System tapes, he says when an advanced devotee sees a tree, he doesn't see a tree, he sees the energy of Krishna. The rupam, okay, this is a tree. What is this tree? This tree is expression of Krishna's energy. It's Krishna's material energy. There's water there. There's Krishna's water energies there. Krishna's earth energies there. Krishna's light energy is there. All these different energies are combined and making this rupam called a tree. But the source of these energies is Krishna. These are Krishna's energies. So it says the advanced devotee doesn't see the tree, he sees Krishna. Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion tapes in Vrindavan and Kartik, he's saying that the devotee sees there may be so many Hare Krishna, there may be thousands of beautiful women before a devotee, but he doesn't become disturbed. He sees they're all energies of Krishna, they're gopis, and I have to serve them because my duty is like that, to serve them, gopi bharja padakamalayor, not to enjoy them, that is maya. So the devotee's vision is that everything is Krishna's energy. So he sees Krishna everywhere. He sees the ocean waves, boom, boom, boom. So this is Krishna's energy. This is water. Water is created by God. And wind is moving it. There's wind, there's magnetic forces, there's wind. Many different energies combining here to make this repetition of the waves. The gravitational pull of the planets is causing the movement of the water, vast body of water. And then there's the wind pushing the water, then all this is going on. So all this movement, all this energy is Krishna. So how can you determine the existence of an object without Krishna? If you see an object, this clock is called West clocks. It's a very, very interesting clock. You press this and it gives you Fahrenheit, and you press that and it gives you centigrade. 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 21 degrees centigrade, just by pressing. Oh, this is West clocks. This is nice. Well, what is it? Well, it's plastic. What is plastic? It comes from oil. What is oil? It's from the earth. This is earth. It's the energy of earth. It's Krishna's energy. And it just came out like this? It just came. You found this lying hanging on a tree? No, this was invented by some scientist, by some man. Well, what is this man? This man is energy of God. And he has intelligence. And where does intelligence come from? It comes from God. He's a source of intelligence and knowledge. So he put it together in a nice clock. So, like Prabhupada said, we give the prizes. We give the Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel Chemistry Prize, the Nobel Physics Prize. We give all these prizes and awards to different scientists. But why don't we give a prize to the person who made the brain of the scientist? Srimad Bhagavatam ki.